podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
The following podcast is a member of the Great Big Owl family.
Football is many things. Unpredictable, exciting, colourful, passionate, absorbing, expensive.
Venal, infuriating, exasperating, time-consuming, depressing. But one thing it most certainly is not, is a level playing field.
Welcome to the famous sloping pitch. Hi, I'm Nick, and I actually noticed a couple of things that happened in football matches last week, which usually we're talking about politics and money. The Mark Noble penalty, obviously, people made a lot of fuss about that, bringing him on to take the penalty, just like England had done in the Euros final. And I have to say, there is a precedent for this. This is not a new thing, that somebody can come on and just take a penalty. For those of you who remember Diana Ross at the 1984 Olympics...
1994 World Cup.
I thought it was the Olympics. It was the 1994 World Cup,
America,
was it?
Yeah.
I don't know why I thought it was the Olympics. That was when they came with the flight pack, wasn't it? Zipping in.
Yeah.
And the other thing was the massive fuss, which I couldn't believe, made about the fact that Lionel Messi was substituted for PSG, which was considered such a terrible, terrible thing. And actually nothing to do with that at all. But it just reminded me of one of my favourite Peter Crouch tweets, I believe, in which Arsenal were apparently rumoured to be about to buy Lionel Messi.
Okay.
Yeah, I really believe that. And one of the Arsenal fans had said, is there anybody out there that wouldn't enjoy Lionel Messi pulling on an Arsenal shirt and playing at the Emirates? And Crouch replied with one word, Lionel. Which I thought was excellent.
Yeah, no, well done him.
Yeah.
Anyway, time for another faint missive from the far-flung ice planet on the outer edge of the solar system that is the very bottom of EFL 2. Two games for Oldham since we last spoke, Nick. On Saturday, we got a 0-0 against Hartlepool, which I didn't see because I was playing cricket.
Defence sorted out then.
Yeah, I was playing cricket where, coincidentally, I also got nil. But we're too far adrift for that.
Defence not sorted out then?
No. Not of defence of my stumps or my pad either, no. I was triggered by a very good friend of mine at the time. But anyway, we're too far adrift for that to lift us off the bottom, but, baby steps.
Uh-huh.
Great oaks from little acorns. The story, though, was off the pitch, as it usually is with Oldham these days. There was a protest outside Boundary Park, 500 strong, which is more than Trump's Justice for J6 got in Washington, apparently. And the protest delivered a coffin to the main entrance, accompanied by a bloke dressed as a clown and another fat lad dressed as the Grim Reaper, like the most depressing fancy dress Saturday at the Test match, And the coffin thing was supposed to be R.I.P. Oldham, our club is dead, that kind of stuff. But the clown and the Grim Reaper seemed a lot more threatening somehow. Not so much a polite request for the owner to sell up, more, I am the clown from It and I'm going to kill you.
Well, actually, to be fair on them, yes, it seems a little bit prosaic to do the clown and the thing all representing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But actually, it got them the publicity.
It did. It got a double page in the Telegraph on Monday.
Because they're sort of witless and uninspired journalists who go, oh, there was a clown and a coffin at Oldham. We can use that.
Yeah. And the journalist who wrote the article about the protest was complaining that they said if you go out, he was in the ground when it started. He said, if you go out, we won't let you back in. If you go out to cover the protest, we won't let you back in. Anyway, but the clown was there because the owner is he's a clown. Yeah. And so is his brother, who is the sporting director. Entirely on merit. He had to interview and everything. Got shortlisted, vetted the whole thing.
Yeah.
But neither of them were there to see the protest or the plane with a banner saying time to go flying over the ground. And the plane, of course, is the accepted way to pass on a message of disapproval in the 21st
century. It certainly is.
Yeah. And the good thing, though, about having clowns in charge is that you can get a lot more people on the team bus.
Hey! Whoa! I'm loving that! Yeah. Except, unfortunately, the wheels will fall off.
Sooner or later. The physio's bucket's full of confetti, though. That's a bit of a drawback.
Yes,
and the clowns did get a deal on some very big boots, which I think is holding us back. But on Tuesday night, we had another experience entirely. Another planet.
I saw that. You shared seven goals, didn't you, with Brentford?
We did, a seven-goal thriller with Brentford. And I have to say, their new stadium's fantastic. And it was packed full of happy, smiling people. people, excited, with a tremendous sort of positive energy about the place. It was like I'd fallen asleep on the train and woken up in a bright, shiny new world where football isn't miserable, grim and depressing. It's a bit like going to the baseball in America. They have a way in America, don't they, of wanting you to have a good time so that you'll come back.
Yes.
And I'm not sure that's going to catch on over
here. Do you know, this is why I distrust Norwich. Every time I go to Carrow Road, they're far too happy and they're far too pleased with the little that they've got. And I don't like that. It unsettles me, Chris.
Yeah. Now, you know, and there was a light show on the pitch before the game started with their floodlights playing, lighting up different areas and in time to the music and stuff. Oh. I mean, I don't think our floodlights could do anything remotely like that unless they had a bulb on the blink. But, you know, obviously I didn't like everything about it. You know, the 7-0 scoreline for a start, that's like England women's team numbers, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it was only when I got home that I realised one of their players had scored 4 goals. I thought they'd all scored.
Yes.
That's what it felt like.
And you're talking about media coverage and you were talking about the clown and all that. You know, I'd like to say, and you know, it's not often you get these exciting things happen. Stoke got a bit of a mention in the Spanish media
today,
being compared with Barcelona.
Yes.
And it actually said, su estilo de jugar es muy malo. Es uno de los peores bases que he visto en décadas. Tú no puedes estar en Stoke City como un equipo primitivo y tira el legado.
How dare they?
Which sounds a lot better, I have to say, in Spanish than it does in English, which is, the style is very bad. It's one of the worst Barcelona teams I've seen in decades. You can't beat Stoke City, a primitive team, and throw away your legacy. So, you know, I'm sticking with the Spanish.
Yes, well. I was enjoying, speaking still of the Carabao Cup, you had a good result in the Carabao Cup.
We beat Watford.
Yeah. I mean, it's always enjoyable, isn't it, to see teams getting dumped after making 11 changes.
Yes.
I mean, if you don't care, why should we? You know.
Yeah, absolutely.
But there was a line in the Telegraph yesterday that made me laugh. Ian Whittell is the writer. Mm-hmm. He said, if the year has a digit in it, it's a safe bet that Manchester City are on course to win the League Cup. Well done.
Yeah.
I like everything about
that's
that.
That's very good. Yeah.
I like everything.
Because it makes you pause and then go, oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I like everything, including calling it the League Cup.
Yes, yes.
Because, you know,
right.
that sponsorship deal really hasn't worked on me. I mean, I've neither drunk, eaten, nor driven a single Carabao since it started.
Well, no, it absolutely right. You know, it really has taken over the world, doesn't it? Carabao, whatever it
Carabao
is.
Carabao fever.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
I'm expecting the Carabao Cup to be trashed next year because of Qatar, you know, and because that's. The schedule's going to be torn up and thrown in the bin.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I saw that, yeah.
And at the shareholders' meeting this week, the Premier League shareholders, the clubs were shown an outline of the calendar for next season, apparently, which is going to have the World Cup smack in the middle of it. It's going to run from the 21st of November until the 18th of December, and the Premier League isn't going to start again until Boxing Day. So they're going to miss out 6 weeks of stuff. And how they're going to fix this is their plan. They're going to start a week earlier and finish a week later.
Oh,
so two extra weeks
yep.
to fit in 6 weeks of stuff.
Yeah. They can do that. That shareholders meeting is also the meeting where they're deciding the punishment for the breakaway teams that try to join the European Super League.
Yeah.
And of course, you look at the six owners, Joe Lewis at Tottenham, John Henry at Liverpool, any of the Glazers at Manchester United, Stan Kroenke at Arsenal, Sheikh Mansour, I should say, at Manchester City, and Roman Abramovich. And you think, do you know what? Between them, I bet they've been to 9 games in the last 10 years. They've probably got the most rubbish programme collections that you've ever seen in your life. And the other, I'll just say two more things about the European Super League because it drives me mad. The other thing is, do they really think that once they do it, say they did it, that Barcelona and Real Madrid aren't going to say, yeah, we're all equal, but some of us are more equal than others and we'll want more money. That is going to happen. There is no doubt about it. And finally, two words. If you want to go it alone and you think you can do it on your own, two words. Bernie Winters. Bernie Winters split up with his brother Mike, set up on his own with Snorbitz the dog.
He had a dog. He replaced Mike. He didn't go on his own.
Well, he did.
He set up a whole new double act with someone who couldn't talk.
Yeah, well, if you think of Snorbitz the dog being the European teams,
yes.
Okay, and the English teams being Bernie Winters,
yeah.
No career after that.
Yeah, no, Schnorbitz is like Slavia Prague or something, and, you know, you're watching Barcelona.
I'm willing to take that. Anyway, lots of other things we could have talked about. We could have talked about the Fair Game Manifesto. We could have talked about the Panorama, about agents tapping up youngsters. We could have talked about gambling and football, Shilton and Merson this week. Fever Pitch, the Premier League propaganda documentary, which we will come to because...
We'll come to those other things as well. Yeah. I mean, we're still talking about FIFA, though, just for a moment. And the World Cup, I mean, the qualifying is still going on, of course. And Hungary got punished for the racist incidents at the game with England a couple of weeks back, throwing paper cups, which almost certainly had piss in them, didn't they?
I would have thought
so. Almost certainly. And Declan Rice took a sip, didn't he? Yeah. But apparently he's never had a beer, so maybe he just didn't know.
Or he's a big fan of Sarah Miles.
Oh, God, yeah.
There's one for the oldsters.
It's very good for you. I mean, we spoke about this, didn't we, a couple of weeks ago, how they got sanctioned by UEFA after the Euros.
Yep.
And had to play three matches behind closed doors. But the World Cup qualifiers were FIFA, so they were able to have a full house of rabid, snarling racists.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and
now they've picked up a ban from FIFA as well.
Yeah.
And the quote was, FIFA takes a clear, zero-tolerance stance against such abhorrent behaviour in football. Yeah. And there's a two-match stadium closure. But the second one is suspended, which sounds like there is some tolerance.
Yeah, that's not that clear,
is it?
There's
a little bit of tolerance.
And also, of course, the phrase, you know, we stand together against racism. But obviously, FIFA's racists are different from UEFA's racists.
Well, yeah. Obviously, you feel like the FIFA people say, well, they're not going to do that in the World Cup. The World Cup's more, you know.
Well, yeah, and also, do you think, I mean, FIFA have got more people to be xenophobic about than UEFA have.
Well, yeah, but also, of course, FIFA don't want to, you know, the top brass at FIFA don't want to alienate that whole Eastern Bloc of countries because they've all got a vote.
Yeah.
And it's all about keeping their position of power.
I know.
I mean, and also in this week's racist news, there was the part of the trouble in Hungary was booing taking the knee. And that's been in the news again with Marcus Alonso of Chelsea unilaterally refusing to do it, saying it's lost its effect. And it will do, because everyone has to do it, or else it loses its effect, doesn't it?
Yes.
I mean, Alonso, though, is pointing, apparently standing, I saw him standing, pointing at a little tiny anti-racism message on his sleeve instead. Well, you know, that's racism sorted then. No need to worry about that anymore.
Well, I think it's a case of watch this space, because I know that Les Ferdinand has also talked about tokenism, but all of that stuff will come out in the wash. And anyway, almost by saying it's lost its impact, you get more impact.
I guess you do. If that was what Alonso was arguing, but it's a very tricky tightrope to walk, isn't it? And his manager is backing his right to make his own decision about it. But Alonso has also had a tweet of support from Nigel Farage. And when that happens, you have to ask yourself if you're on the right side of the argument.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right. And talking about column inches, Jimmy Greaves, of course. We have to mention Jimmy Greaves.
We do have to.
Who I have to say, I'm just too young, if that's the right word. I'm not as old as I could be to have seen him play. I think I might have seen him play once for West Ham. But he's my favourite sort of finisher. See, I love that quiet assassin thing, like Emilio Butragueño. And there was a great quote from Geoffrey Green from The Times describing the way Greaves finished. And he said, he slipped the ball into the net almost silently, like someone closing the door of a Rolls Royce. I love that.
Yeah, no, that's very good. I mean, when he transferred to West Ham from Spurs with Martin Peters going the other way, that was like the first big shock transfer I can remember. And how surprised people were that Spurs were letting such a legend leave as like a make weight.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
But no, I never really saw him. I've seen the clips of him shutting the door of that Rolls Royce, and also of him catching a dog that got on the pitch in the 1962 World Cup.
In which he said he was Garrincha's dog catcher, I think is what he said, because Garrincha ended up adopting that dog. I mean, I don't think there was any paperwork involved, but he just took it home, was what happened. Yeah. And the other thing that Greaves did, which you just don't see enough anymore, and which I love, is he went round the keeper quite a lot. Is that because goalkeepers are taller, because there are more covering defenders? I don't know. It seems to be a lost art.
No, I think when you get that close to the keeper now, modern strikers are looking to go down. They feel a touch. They're entitled to go down, apparently.
Apparently, yes.
According to...
Yeah. The thing is, they're always entitled to go down.
As long as they're pulled down. I mean, I'll always remember Greavesy for that shot of him spitting out his chewing gum at full time in 1966. You know, the 2012 Cup final should have been his crowning glory, but he was injured and then couldn't get his place back off of Jeff Hurst.
Yes.
And while everyone else is dancing up and down, he looks as miserable as sin. And that sort of bitterness is something that I think is it makes you feel like he was like a rounded
a proper person. Yeah. I mean, it's just honesty.
Rather than just feeding the positive.
Yes. You know, if that had been John Updike or somebody like that, they just that's clever, isn't it? Yeah. To be honest,
the character work that's gone into spitting that during that.
Exactly. But the other thing you were saying to me the other day about the photographs of him, and he's so often because he has that short hair. And quite often he's in photographs in his suit. I saw one with him in a suit and an umbrella and a bowler hat, which was fantastic.
Yeah. And I mean, he had a look, didn't he?
Yeah.
That even in his 20s, he looked like a mature, middle-aged businessman.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, and a lot of actors who grew up in the 40s and the 50s had that sort of thing. You know, they're prematurely mature, like Alan Bates or Connery even, you know.
Or even Kane as well. Yeah.
And maybe because of rationing.
Well, who knows? But that thing about footballers seeming much, much, much older. I mean, two things I remember about the League Cup final that Stoke won in 1972 on March the 4th.
Back to
Marsh, Pedrick, Bernard Smith, Floyd, Connery, Green, after everybody used them. Anyway, when George Eastham scored the winner, they said, the old man's got it. And he was 36, which is quite old. And the other thing was Peter Dobing. Okay, Peter Dobing, who was our captain, and indeed your wife made a garden gnome of him for me.
Uh-huh.
Peter Dobing, okay, not only smoked a pipe, which is a fantastic thing for a footballer to do, but also in the questions they put to him before the final, they asked him his hobby, and his hobby was poaching. And this was not a joke about scoring goals. He actually liked to go out and nick other people's livestock.
As a younger man, had he been a gamekeeper? I wonder. I know. Jimmy Greaves was an appealing character, wasn't he? And his stats, actually, you know, to say we haven't seen him, never saw him play, but his stats were just astonishing.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the outstanding one, I think, that I saw this week was the chart for top scorers in the top five European leagues. Ronaldo and Messi are way out in front, of course, but in third place, you know, the record they both had to break in 2017 is Jimmy Greaves, you know, just ahead of Gerd Müller. And Gerd Müller is a heroically brilliant finisher,
exactly.
And, you know, that doesn't include the 25 goals he scored for Barnet, you know, which is hopefully where Ronaldo will end up.
I can't see any reason why he wouldn't.
Now,
talking about ending up at Barnet, Derby.
Oh, ending up playing Barnet.
That's what I meant, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, of course, Derby went into administration yesterday, which has been a long time coming, hasn't it?
Yeah.
And the wheels of EFL punishment seem to grind incredibly slowly. But anyway, the 12-point deduction that they've got for the administration is one thing, and that puts them bottom on -2, 6 points behind Forest. So not actually the end of the world, I don't think.
It also means that Forest's new manager has taken them up a place in
up
the league
place already.
Without playing a game.
Already, yeah. They did the
Steve
right thing.
Steve Cooper, is that his name? Something like that.
Is it Steve Cooper?
Something like that.
Yeah. I think that's who they were after, I think, I mean, since 2015, Derby have been solely owned by local entrepreneur Mel Morris.
Yes.
And he reckons that he's pumped 200 million quid into the club trying to get them to the promised land, the Premier League, where 200 million is nothing. It's just two England substitutes, isn't it?
It's two Jack Grealishes, exactly. Yeah. But if he had bought two Jack Grealishes, which I admit is difficult, he may well have gone up because they lost to Aston Villa in one of the playoff finals.
In 2019, and arguably Grealish would have been cheaper then.
Yeah.
But if they'd bought Grealish, he wouldn't have been captaining Villa on that day. But they did have Mason Mount playing, if you remember, on that
they
day.
They did, yes.
Who was getting into the England team ahead of Grealish anyway.
Yes, but unfortunately they also had Ashley Cole playing that day.
Oh,
I've got
they?
A feeling. Yeah. I think, I mean, this is something that actually does exercise. I do get quite cross about this.
Well,
because the thing is, I don't know Mel Morris, but I believe that he genuinely wanted Derby to do well.
I feel sure,
And I think he's a proper Derby fan and all that. But there are two problems with what he did, which is, you know, in the end, he kept throwing money in. And basically what he did was have a massive bet.
That's the massive gamble that all the championship clubs are doing.
And he just kept doubling up and doubling up.
I mean, the fact is, he blames COVID for pushing him into this trouble. But, you know, so what? Same for everybody, mate. You know, get on with it.
Yeah.
And the fact is, Derby have been playing fast and loose with the rules for some years.
Well, that's the other point.
And since they came down from the Premiership, and they don't get the parachute payments anymore, but they have to compete with the teams that are.
Yeah.
So in order to get them up there, financially, to compete financially, they're facing another 9-point deduction, maybe up to 12, for another thing, which punishment can't take place while they're under administration. So that might be next season now. But under the EFL's profitability and sustainability rules, previously known as financial fair play, mockably, championship clubs are only allowed to lose £39 million over a 3-year period.
Yeah.
Now, the controversy that Derby got away with, they sold the ground to Mel Morris for £80 million.
Yeah,
it was valued at £41 million. And a complete coincidence that the difference is the £39 million that you're allowed to lose.
Yeah.
But it's just a way for Morris to pump £39 million more into the club without having to sell any players having to generate any more revenue. Sheffield Wednesday did similar, and they had a 12-point deduction, but their case was slightly different because they shoved the sale into the accounts a year earlier to stay below the £39 million thing.
Yeah.
And then they got a relative slap on the wrist, which is a 12-point penalty at the start of a season rather than retrospectively, which would have relegated them.
Yeah.
But then in these circumstances, you have to think of all the other teams
who have
gone down instead of them.
And this is what drives me mad. So there are two things, and I know you put this in your book, that actually Mel Morris's instincts are entirely correct, which the more money you spend, the higher you will finish in the league. And you prove that with your league table, where it was all about turnover was the same as position.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, but the other thing, this is the question I'm really interested in, is what if Derby had gone up?
Mm.
What if Derby had gone up last season, for instance? Mm. Because these misdemeanours were all before that.
Yes, yes.
But I bet you anything, nothing would have happened to them at all if they'd gone into the Premier League.
Well, no, I mean, they kind of get out of reach of the organisation that can punish them. Didn't that happen to QPR? Didn't QPR have a thing where they broke EFL rules, but they were in the Premier League, so they couldn't punish them until they came back.
Well, and in fact, Leicester were one that got away as well. But the other thing is exactly what you say about the other clubs. So Wickham, for instance, who were trying to sue them. You know, Wickham and Sheffield Wednesday went down last season.
Yeah.
Well, they've got an argument to say that these points should have been taken away last season.
Yeah, by a point. I mean, Sheffield Wednesday derby was the last game of last season, wasn't it?
But the other thing that really, really worries me is there's an unconscious bias amongst journalists that certain teams, it's sadder if it happens to them than other teams. And I hate that. And basically, if you have a look, it's mostly teams that have been in the Premiership. So you talk about getting relegated out of the league, for instance, and they go, wasn't it fantastic? Burnley survived in 1987. Well, no, not for Lincoln. Brighton survived in 1998. Great for Brighton, not for Doncaster. 2003, Swansea survived. Great for Swansea, but not for Exeter. Mm. You know, it doesn't work like that. It's like my mum will always say, oh, it was terrible what happened to that girl and she was so pretty. And you think, well, no, that's not the point. It isn't about, you know, what you like about somebody.
Well, no,
it's about fairness.
It is different in football because someone has to go down. It's not like, you know, it's going to be sad whoever goes down. Someone has to go down.
Yeah.
You know, and if you've not won the points and you've lost the points because you've tried to cheat the system.
Well, exactly.
I mean, I think the problem with how the championship is at the moment is that all the teams are trying to punch above their weight financially.
Yeah,
I mean, I saw one statistic that the average championship club spends in 2018-19, this was 107% of their revenue on wages, on players' wages, which is so there's a loss built into their plan, and that's the average. I mean, Reading are looking at, and this is what's going to save Derby, is that Reading are going to have a points deduction as well, because you're only allowed to lose 39 million over three, and Reading have lost 93 million.
Yeah.
Which, you know, there's a forlorn argument that they misread it and got the numbers the wrong way around. But Reading's wage bill is 194% of their turnover, and that's not sustainable in any other walk of life. No. Is it?
And then this is where the whole sympathy comes. And I'm going to finish on this. People will be sympathetic for Derby fans. I am. People will be sympathetic for the people that work at Derby, and I am, but it's not Wigan. And remember what happened to Wigan was that they were owned by Stanley Choi, who sold them to NLF, okay, which was owned by Stanley Choi, borrowed so much money that they would have to go into administration, okay? They got relegated because they had the points deducted, and it turns out, according to Rick Parry in a off-the-record interview, that in fact Stanley Choi, the betting magnate, or someone very similar, or someone close to him, had put a massive bet on Wigan being relegated that season. So, in fact, this whole plan was to get the points deduction. That's how to play the game.
Oh, man.
Anyway.
Well, look at the Derby shirt, because Derby is sponsored by a betting company, and the little legend on their shirt says, "Set your limits."
Oh, that is fantastic. And I think we should definitely end it on that, because we've got our guest coming in a moment. Now, today's guest is a lover of the whole sporting kit bag. I think it's fair to say that there's nothing he won't watch, with the possible exception of... No, nothing. And not just watching, hosting the first American football coverage, making football, proper football, documentaries, and bowling Chris Tarrant first ball with an innovative new delivery called a Newton's Apple. Twice winner of his cricket team's best catch taken whilst smoking. Comedian, improviser, and dyed-in-the-wool Farnborough Town supporter, Mr. Andy Small.
Thank you, boys.
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, now,
I've just got to correct you, it's not Farnborough Town, sadly, anymore.
Is it Farnborough 2000 and something?
No, it's just Farnborough FC. And the current manager, who I'm sure we'll get on to, and I'll probably end up getting banned from the ground, but he sends out the programme notes to all the when we play an away game, and it doesn't ever mention that there was a club before he arrived.
Oh, it's like the Premier League.
Nothing happened before he arrived.
There's a cut-off. When was the cut-off then?
Well, he arrived. He's coming up to 11. It was November 2011 he joined us.
Okay, so nearly
10 years. He's had 10 seasons. And I went Tuesday night, and we got knocked out second qualifying round of the FA Cup for the 10th season in a row.
Oh, man.
By?
By the Metropolitan Police.
Oh! No!
I know. They had one shot.
They only need one shot, these guys. They're trained. They know what they're doing.
Was it with a taser? Was it?
Sadly, they don't have policemen playing for that. That stopped in about 2012.
Oh, don't they?
It used to be all policemen, but because of the overtime that they're all doing, they couldn't get a team together.
So basically, the Metropolitan Police don't have any policemen playing for them, but have to be called the Metropolitan Police. But Farnborough, who are still the same, have to change their name.
Well, that's because we went into administration.
Well, that's all the fashion, all the rage these days.
Well, yeah.
So, I mean, this is such a dull question, but it's a question that I think people want to know. That's why Farnborough Town? And was there ever any temptation to support anybody else?
Well, I spent 6 years in Liverpool between 77 and 83.
I had six
pretty good years in Liverpool. And then I came back to London, and I thought, oh, I'll go back to supporting Farnborough, because I didn't want to go and watch any of the London clubs. So I went back to supporting Farnborough. And I really enjoy non-league. I've been writing for the non-league football paper.
And I look forward to subscribing to that next year.
It's a good paper. It's a really good paper.
It's a good paper.
Don't. Chris is looking over the precipice at the moment.
I know. I've been watching Oldham's fall. And it won't be long.
We're like four or five places above you.
You're only three divisions above us.
Three divisions, is it? Yeah.
Well, you've been much higher than that, haven't you?
We were in the conference, We've got a ground that's for a conference side, and we used to get regularly.
Which conference side is it for? Don't they get annoyed that you play there on Saturdays?
No, we've got a, you know, we've got a great stand, and there's the support are there. I mean,
how close did you get to the league then? What was the closest that you got?
About sixth one year.
Were the playoffs that year or not?
No. That was before playoffs.
Yeah. No.
But yeah, they were happy days, and now it's very sad because. As I say, this manager we've got doesn't seem to be able to get sacked, no matter how bad the team play or the results are.
Is he the owner's brother?
Well, he did used to own the club, and then he sort of, I think he was made bankrupt because he bought Oliver Reed's house and then couldn't pay the mortgage.
Oh, that'll do it. Yeah.
And then, don't quote me on any of this.
You're on a show!
We're recording it!
But anyway, so he wasn't allowed. He's not allowed.
Don't listen, people.
He's not allowed to own the club, so he sold it to his mate Rob for £1. And but he's still really the owner, and the you know, so he's not going to sack himself. So our only hope is that someone comes in for him. You might know him better as Spencer Trithewen, who tried to buy Aldershot back in the 80s, and then it turned out he didn't have any money. He's also spent time inside for pretending to be Whitney Houston's European tour manager.
Come on, we've all done that, haven't we? I mean, which of us haven't?
Should be a slap on the wrist.
He got 3 months for it.
where were the dates? Hi, thank you.
Yeah, and he claims to have played for Nottingham Forest, but I've tried for years. He's a fantasist.
He's the Michael Knighton of the non-league.
That's a very good analogy.
In that he has £1 to spend.
Yeah. So let me ask you a question. First of all, you know, I say my son has a Farnborough.
Yeah.
Want to say town. Has a Farnborough shirt. And, you know, and all our best wishes are with Farnborough. I want to know if you've ever played Hungerford Town.
Hungerford, yeah, we've played Hungerford, yeah.
Because we have a listener that supports Hungerford Town who's told us that they have a sloping pitch. Do they have a sloping pitch?
They do have a sloping pitch. But most grounds at our level do. I'm really sad that Wimbledon have got a new ground now because they had a real slope on their pitch.
Yes, yeah, yeah. he says it's a sloping pitch, but it's not famous because they've never beaten anybody particularly. So that was Mark Ridley who did that. But you've flirted with international football. I mean, I've been to England games with you, and various other teams.
I sort of stopped going to England games now because, especially after when we were in France and we were in the Marseille
in the World Cup, '98.
Oh man,
there was just too many animals, basically.
Well, yeah, and my mother and father were there. Weren't they? It was horrible.
Yeah,
we were... still, they can both swing a punch.
They held their ground.
And I got caught up in trying to get back to the car after that game.
Yeah, yeah.
In an old-fashioned stone battle, two sides of the road.
Yeah. And, so I like going and watching other teams like Iran.
Iran.
I went to Brazil to watch Iran. I was invited by the Iranian FA. Who I bumped into in the I bumped into the Iranian FA in Sao Paulo airport.
Did you?
And I was flying
down.
You
never told me this.
Yeah, yeah. And they said, really? Oh, we're playing in Curitiba against Nigeria. It was the most boring game ever.
Well, but maybe you should just rewind a little and explain why you have an Iranian connection, you two.
Well, Andy and I did a documentary about Iran for the 1998 World Cup, in which I have to say we had the most fantastic time.
It was the best summer, yeah.
And went to Iran and everything.
Well, we had the most ridiculous amount of access. I mean, basically...
Which we got through Nick being on Mr. Bean, because the head of the Iranian FA wasn't going to give us the rights until he suddenly went Mr. Bean and pointed at Nick, and then he then reenacted the scene that Nick does with Rowan Atkinson.
He said you nicked Mr. Bean's camera, and I said yeah that's true. He said Mr. Bean put a bin on your head. I said yes, that's true. He said Mr. Bean poked you with a pen and you made a noise. I said yeah, that's true. And then he paused and he went I will be Mr. Bean. So there I am in the office of actually the Iranian oil ministry.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
With a bin on my head, and he's poking me with a pen.
And Adam, the producer's got a cheque for $30,000, and he wasn't interested in that at all.
He was interested in the Mr. Bean. I have to say that around about that time, I went to America and was I had a day to kill and was found myself in a shopping mall in Los Angeles. Walked into there, and that scene from Mr. Bean, the camera, the bin, the poking with the pen, was playing on about 50 televisions I walked into that shop.
That'll send them into the shops, no problem whatsoever.
No one was buying a TV for some reason, I don't know why.
And we went to the great USA versus Iran game that World Cup.
That was, well, you did. I was in Iran for that.
You've got to tell that story.
He went to that game with me, though. Just
he's sat there in France having had probably a couple of glasses of wine before he's gone in, and I'm sat in this restaurant in Tehran, and they were the
driest city in the world.
It was, and they'd also said that no, there was to be no gatherings of over 12 people, and I was in a restaurant with 120 people, just and waiting.
The Revolutionary Guard don't muck about, do they?
Yeah, but that's like 10 separate gatherings, just on the same premises.
You nearly got yourself in trouble, Andy. Tell us about that.
After they won, the whole it's now 3 o'clock in the morning. The whole city goes crazy. There's about 4 million people come out onto the streets, and the producer, who's now the cameraman as well, said, "Right, we'll go to the main square in Tehran." So we get there, and I said to the fixer, "Am I safe to get out?" And he said, "No, you'll get killed if you get out of the car." And Adam went, "You're getting out of this car." And I said, "It's all right for you. You've got an Iran shirt on." I was dressed in like this suit.
This Yankee Doodle Dandy thing. Stars on it, stripes, cowboy hat.
Even a bit of macaroni.
And Royal Marines. Not Royal Marines.
Isn't that the name of your horse?
Yeah,
it was.
A bit of macaroni.
So eventually, Adam convinced me to get out. I get out. They spot me, and they all start pointing and screaming. Yeah. So I just legged it as fast as I could across this square, and there was a big fountain in the middle, and I jumped into the water and climbed up this fountain. And they were still chasing me with Adam with the camera behind me. And I just turned and I just named the whole Iranian team from Abizaida up to Hamid Zili. No. I can't remember the name.
I'm Abizaida, Mohammed Khani, Pasha Zadeh, Madavikia Begari, Ali Day, Steely, obviously, Hakpur, and then the little Suzuki. But what was his real name?
I don't know.
Mitsubishi?
He was called Suzuki because he was tiny and he just made a noise like a Suzuki moped.
I can't believe I forgot it. Anyway, yeah.
So, and they all cheered. And then I went, BBC. And they all went, "Hey!" And I was safe. But
was it the BBC, Andy?
No,
it was
Channel 4. But
I know you. I know that you you put a lot of preparation, unlike your improvisation stuff where you don't do any preparation.
Yeah.
You put a lot of preparation into that. And obviously you headed for the fountain. Had you heard that Iranians don't like water?
They're like cats.
I'll be safe here.
They do like tea and cake. I know that.
Just in case they set you on fire.
We had like 7 interviews a day, and every person we went to interview would give you a piece of cake and a cup of tea, and it was very rude if you didn't accept it.
Yeah, yeah.
So by the end of it, I was about 4 stone heavier. We were only there about 3 weeks, but we actually used to train with them in Rijeka, where before the tournament they had a friendly against the Croatians, and we spent a week just training with them every morning. And I used to knock crosses in for the goalkeeper, and Nick used to run up and down the pitch doing the attack drills. And it was, and then there was one night we got into bed, and Nick was lying next to me, and he went, "You know, if one of them gets injured, you think they'll ask us?"
Well, I'm sorry, but I am a dreamer. I've read a lot of comics where that happens. Billy Dane, for instance.
Did you not once take your boots to Regent's Park and play for the Metropolitan Police. Just used to go to Regent's Park and say, any chance of a game?
Game, lads? Well, of course. Yeah,
and played once for the Metropolitan Police.
Did I? There you go.
When we were sharing a flat. Yeah,
yeah, I can believe that. Yeah. I was definitely have boots will travel. Journeyman striker.
Journeyman striker. That's right. That's right. Well, no, now you're talking about playing. Of course, Andy is, we should mention, the former centre-half and stalwart of Les Raymond Soleil.
Well, yeah, the only defender, really.
Yes.
Yeah, Brian, if you're listening.
Oh, no. Well, Brian came a bit later. Yeah. I mean, before that, it was Badil and Patrick Marber.
Again, like Chris did earlier, I'm going to have to explain what's going on here. This is a team that we played for, an occasional team, but we used to train a lot on Fridays, who went to France. And
yeah, we worked a lot on set pieces. Yeah.
We didn't have a name for the team. And Rob Harley and I, who were in a room, and French Going for Gold came on. You remember Going for Gold? And one of the subjects, you know, these have subjects that ask questions on. Yeah. One of the subjects was Les Raymond Célèbres, which means famous Raymonds. And we loved it so much we named the team Raymond Célèbres.
Yeah. I mean, I can remember lots of Andy was a great turner-upper, as the only guy who's played nearly as many games as me. Always available, Andy. Always,
well, yeah, that's my career. Yeah.
That's on your CV. But I can remember you making a great one-handed save one time, except you weren't in goal.
No, I was centre half.
And Alistair McGowan saved the penalty. I remember it's a very happy day. And I remember also, more recently, you coming out of retirement, out of injury-forced retirement.
At the age of 47.
To play in my testimonial with the sole intention of assaulting our friend Franco, who is, it has to be said, a massive pain in the arm. And sure enough, midway through the second half, bang, Franco's up in the air, lands in a heap, and Andy subbed himself off before the ref has to make a decision of any kind.
You know, Andy'd be that person that if somebody said, you know, what do you miss most about playing? And he'd say, kicking Franco.
Kicking Franco. Yeah.
So we're going to finish up in a second. So, Andy, do you have a Farnborough Town song to play us out?
Any song
you want.
Would they have different songs now that they're Farnborough FC and not Farnborough Town? Have they
not
had
really
to move on?
No. We're still stuck in the 70s with our football chants at Farnborough. And although there was one brilliant bit where we played Swindon Supermarine, the only team to be named after an aeroplane, The goalkeeper mucked it up and sort of it was a back pass and he sort of missed it and the ball went out for our corner, and half the fans, I mean six of them, started going did it did it did it did it, and the other half went. They started singing another song, and then the two of them tried to do the other one's song, and in the end it was that sort of sums up Farnborough, basically. It was just a mess.
Oh, you know, at Brentford on Tuesday night, mm-hmm. I heard for the first time in years and years, mm-hmm. the Brentford fans, when they were 6-0 up, mm-hmm. started doing the old "Oh, your shit." Ah, and they
it's
our goalkeeper,
popular,
frankly,
Farnborough, yeah.
frankly, is, you know, but at 6-0 up, it felt so mean spirited, and they went on and on at this poor guy. You could see him withering in front of you.
Well, you know, and it makes you think, and we'll probably close on this, but what happened to the days when fans sang, "We're the best behaved supporters in the land"?
Oh, well, those are
we're the best behaved supporters in the land.
Where's the
we're
bloody,
the best behaved supporters?
Scottish supporters at the World Cup in 98. The best behaved supporters in the world.
Well, with that fantastic impression of all people in Scotland, that's the end
but
for today.
But it was one person I was thinking of in particular.
Thanks very much to Andy. We should mention that you're actually playing the Globe.
The Globe Theatre on the South Bank, yes.
With the Comedy Store Players.
Yes, with Josie Lawrence and Neil Mullarkey and Richard French, Lee Simpson and Marcus Brigstock and Ruth Bratt, I think, have joined us. Yes, so it'd be very good fun.
You're covering your back there with that, aren't you?
We've got a good lineup there.
All right. Thanks very much, Andy.
Cheers.
And thanks for coming in. Lovely to see you as always. Sports Social Podcast Network.